Good morning and welcome to another Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation's Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. I'm your host, Michael Kernodal, and it is a pleasure to once again have this great educator, the professor, Brandon Robertson. And you know what? Today's topic is transposition methods for band directors. So thank you for all my band directors that's joining in with us live, or maybe you're listening to the podcast or the recording. We're going to share some great information. I know transposition is something that our students want to dive in, but why not get it from someone that's out in the field and doing well in this and teaching and actually playing too as well. So I want to remind you, if you're here live, if you have questions, and believe me, we love questions, just go into the chat feature, type it in there, and we're going to leave some time at the end so the professor can answer those questions. You know, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for our wonderful sponsor. So I want to remind you to please check out the studio archives of our past video sessions at clearwaterjazz.com's education and outreach section. That's brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management at Stewart Partners and Duke Energy, as well as the online podcast available wherever you stream. And that's brought to you by friends over there at Marine Max Clearwater. And before we get into this, I mean, I know Professor Robertson is not a visitor here. He's a regular. Just some of the past sessions he's given us. I mean, where do I begin? How about how to develop melodic bass lines, playing duo performances, how to accompany a vocalist? I mean, that's extremely important. How about know your worth negotiating a gig? So not only is he giving us knowledge on how to play an instrument, but also how about being a professional in the field? So that's awesome. If you don't know, Brandon Robertson, he is an Emmy-nominated director, professional upright, electric bassist, composer. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's a music educator, and he's originally from Tampa, Florida. We call it
Tampa.
He's completed his bachelor's arts in music from Florida State University in 2009 and a master's of music in jazz studies in the spring of 2016. You know, currently you'll see him on stages all over the country, but he's also currently the director of jazz studies and the director of the FGCU basketball band at Florida Gulf Coast University and Fort Myers. You also may have heard some of his awesome music. He had a debut not too long ago, and it's called Based on a True Story. You know, you can pick it up on iTunes, went all the way to number 16, or you can check it out on Spotify. Awesome, awesome, awesome project. And before we give him any more props, we want to hear about this topic today. So without any further delay, Professor Brandon Robertson, the stage is all yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for the wonderful, wonderful introductory, and a special shout out to the Clearwater Jazz Holiday for putting on these virtual master classes. They've been going strong now for the last 2 years, and there has been an abundant amount of collection of archives that have been done by myself and other various wonderful musicians that I have the pleasure of working with out of the Tampa Bay area in the St. Pete area. So thank you guys to all of our sponsors that are looking into investing into the future of our youth and investing into this wonderful art, you know, that we call jazz. So let's get right into it. For today's topic, we're talking about transposition methods for band directors. And so what I've come across recently is I have a student, a former student of mine who graduated recently from FGCU, who is a local band director down here in the Southwest Florida area, particularly out of the Cape Coral area. And he called me up one day and he says, Professor, I play percussion. I'm a drummer. I'm a percussionist. I'm a drummer. And I'm kind of having some issues with these transpositions of instruments that I have of coming into my band. You know, I have a few students who play French horn. I have some students who play tuba. I have some students who play, saxophone, various different type of instruments that aren't really standard traditional jazz instruments. And so let's give some historical content here. And I had to explain to my students, like, let's back up for a second. Now, when you talk about early ragtime, the tuba was the double bass. In the earlier New Orleans bands, there wasn't a gentleman walking around playing, walking around with a wheel on their bass, playing upright bass. Pop Foster, who essentially was one of the founding fathers of the jazz double bass, he's also one of the few that played at King Oliver's Creole Orchestra. And he's the one that actually also helped discover a little 14-year-old boy who went off to become one of the greatest innovators of our music, Louis Armstrong, a.k.a. Satchmo. And so I had to explain to him that some of these instruments that you're getting into your band were actually traditional instruments. I'm not speaking about the flute or the French horn, but for tuba, yes, the tuba does exist in that particular era. Now, obviously, when we started to move forward into the 20s and 30s, the tuba kind of was diminished and the double bass arrived. And so now you have a more solid instrument that can lay down the same range as a tuba, but a more constant beat. And it's more consistent and it underlines the whole foundation of what jazz was reaching up to now. So I told him, I said, well, what is the biggest struggle that you're having? And he's like, well, trying to transpose these charts into fitting in a form-fitting matter to where it makes sense to those players. Because, you know, I have players who are reading, you know, like my French horn player is reading a trombone part. And I was like, well, that's a whole different transposition because French horn is like a F tuning. So it's not that there's that I don't think that would sound good. And if you talk about traditional instruments that are doubling or substitute instruments, this is where I have found some band directors have struggled. Now, most, if not all band directors I've worked with have never had this issue. Most of them actually have the background in music education where they're taught that. So they kind of know how to manipulate it. But let's talk about the folks who are running like community bands or also after school programs, or in this instance, if you're at a school where you really do have a limitation on instruments and players and you have to make it work, if you are interested or encouraged to start a jazz ensemble or, you know, a small jazz group, you know, combo, et cetera. So here's my take on this. When you're dealing with, we're going to go through each layer of sections. Now, we're going to start with the rhythm section. I will highly, highly advise you to never try to replace a bass player with the tuba unless you are performing traditional Dixieland music or early ragtime music from New Orleans. That would be the only exception where that instrument is prevalent and it actually would be doable because of the nature of the sound of that era. And at that time frame, the tuba was the dominant instrument for the lower end, not necessarily a double bass. In this case, in the modern, postmodern jazz era, you necessarily won't really find a substitution for piano unless you had a guitar player. Now, I've been in instances where I've had band directors who had both, and I would always suggest to them that if you're going to have two chordal instruments like that, piano and guitar, then you need to either split the charts up to where the pianist is only just comping while the guitar is holding down the main riff, or vice versa, or you give them assigned sections within the music so they're not overlapping or clashing against each other. That's one scenario. The other, the drum set. Now, they used to have trap sets. And so back in the day, the trap sets were these little configurations where they would, you know, they had this big bass drum that's strapped on them. And then they had these little other components that were attached to the strap, strapped to the drum, which they have the long pole, and then their foot, they have something that's attached to their foot, so it can create like a hi-hat. So when they walk and they're playing, they have this little in that motion. But in this case, in most modern jazz, we have the drums, so you don't necessarily need to do that. So your rhythm section is kind of covered, with the exception of the guitar player that came much later, I would say in the late 30s, going into the 40s. But even before that, the Django Reinhardt, like he kind of solidified a lot of that, a lot of those sounds and tones, but that was much later, not in the earlier jazz. So always my first point is, when you think about the transpositions, and I'm talking about transpositions, even substitution of instruments, you need to know the history and the eras of where these instruments were prevalent. So I wanted to get that out the way. But let's start with saxophones. Now, usually most saxophone players in a jazz ensemble have had some form of experience or introductory to other woodwind instruments. So aside, because it is a reed instrument, you have the clarinet, you have the oboe, you have the bassoon. And so these reed instruments all have common similarity. You have a reed and you blow air through it, right? So in this case, if you have a flute player who decides, I would like to join jazz band, I would always suggest for them to put them on an alto part because of the range. It's pretty much in the same range, in the same stratosphere. And the sound is not that completely off, unless you have six flute players in your jazz band and only two altos. That's going to create some weird sounds. So I would always make sure that when you're looking at music, and if you know you're going to have a flute player in your jazz ensemble, always look for those, what we call the additional parts. But if you can't find an additional part, another transposition part that they can read would be an alto part. Same thing goes for tenor saxophone. Tenor saxophone and clarinet are pretty much within the same stratosphere, okay? You have a B-flat instrument versus where the flute, which can be a C instrument as well, a C instrument as well, but it can also in the same transposition of an E-flat instrument based off its range. So they're not that far off. So if you ever have, let's say, for instance, my very first year at FGCU, I didn't have no tenor players. For some reason, I just could not find any tenor players at the school. And so I had to actually borrow from our wind orchestra two clarinet players to play the tenor parts in jazz band. Did it sound weird? Yes, it did. However, it actually worked because everything that they were reading was transposable and they understood it because it was in the same register. So even though the sound had a different context, it wasn't completely off. And I tried to pick a lot of music that actually had doubling parts with clarinet and tenor. So it didn't sound as foreign if I just gave them a straight modern chart that did not have any doubling in that particular piece. So if you're going to go that route with transposition of instruments, you need to make sure that they have readily available parts. And if they don't, you yourself can either write out the part from another score. Like, so what I would do sometime, what I did my first year is some of the charts that I really wanted to play, but I knew there was no, I couldn't find a tenor part for it because maybe the music was missing or et cetera. I just wrote it out for my students. I actually went on Finale and wrote out the tenor part and gave it to them. And they were able to read it, you know, playing the clarinet, because clarinet is a doubling instrument for that specific instrument. Now the bass clarinet, which essentially is used if you have a Barry sax, I would not necessarily go that route unless you have to. And what I mean by unless you have to, if it's a piece of music like, for instance, my jazz band did an arrangement of John Clayton's Mood Indigo, where there is a specific bass clarinet part, like for the whole, for most of the whole chart, not in its entirety, but for the majority of that chart, it was in bass clarinet. It worked because of that, because that song was arranged for that. Not saying in the original recording with Ellington, but just for that particular arrangement, there was a bass clarinet part that used. Now that is another doubling instrument, but I would not rely on that particular instrument to get the sound that you need, because again, a clarinet, you know, it's kind of like wood, you know, and then you have a Barry sax that's not built like that. So it's kind of different. So with the saxophones, if you have like a flute part, or if you don't have an alto, you can use soprano sax. But again, it just depends on the context of the song that you're performing for that, or that particular chart. When it comes to trombone, I've seen a lot of band directors do this down here in my area, not too often, but it's because they didn't have a choice, because that's all they had, where they didn't have any lower ends on their trombones. So what they did was they had a tuba player play the bass bone. I'm going to tell you right now, that's not going to work out for too long if you try to transpose a trombone part with a tuba. Again, it just depends on the nature of what you're playing. If you're playing music before 1922, 25 at the latest, you can definitely get away with it, because in that era, that was prevalent. That's what was happening. But anything beyond that, unless it's like super arranged and you had to, I would not advise you to use a tuba player for your trombones. My first teaching job was at a middle school when I was living in Tallahassee, Florida. And that particular band I had two French horn players that were in the trombone section. Now, they were able to read the trombone part, but it had a very different tone. So I'm not suggesting to anyone to use a French horn, but it has happened. And it does kind of have a similar sound, but not to the depth that a real trombone, a vowel trombone could use. You have the tenor bone and you have a vowel trombone. So I would always suggest to band directors, if you go with a vowel trombone, just again, it has to be within the right context. Otherwise, you're not going to, it's going to change the sound of the ensemble, at least for your brass. Okay. For trumpets, I would always suggest flugel. I have had several band directors who would switch off and try to find charts if they didn't have a lot of trumpet players, but they had trumpet players that, you know, could play flugel, then you can kind of offset it. Like I remember Clifford is a really great piece that a lot of middle school and high school bands play. And that, you know, those particular parts, the solo part usually is a flugelhorn playing. And I know Clark Terry used a flugel a lot when he was in the big band, working with Quincy Jones. And so I would always tell folks that whenever it comes to that particular instrument, there aren't really other instruments that you can substitute or transpose for trombone players, or I mean for trumpet players. And so that's kind of like the general synopsis of what that would entail in terms of like what type of instruments that you can use. But let's go backwards a bit. When it comes to the lead sheets, everybody nowadays or jazz musicians, some are against it, but those who know how to utilize it and use it correctly, you have the iReel Pro. And so I actually did a masterclass on this about how to use the iReel Pro to your advantage without it seeming like you don't know what you're doing. And so on the iReel Pro, you're actually able to edit the chord changes. They don't have actual notes on there because of copyright and legal legalities. You can't have necessarily like the actual melody, but you can have the chords, because you can't really copyright chords. So I always tell certain band directors, like, if you have a chart where, you know, let's say a blues, for instance, well, there's a transposition button within that app that is set for each instrument. So if you have, you know, a trombone, you set it, you know, for C. If you have trumpet or tenors, you set it for B flat. If you have berry or altos, you set it for E flat, flute, E flat. And so that way the transposition is a lot faster, and it saves you more time from having to sit there and try to do that by ear and write that out. Now, if you old school like me, you can go ahead and do that. And it, you know, if you know how to do it, it's quicker. But with that app, you know, most students are not going to spend the time trying to do it on their own, especially if they don't know how to. And so I would always suggest them to purchase that app and just go in there, and you can actually edit if you know the correct changes, because those changes are some people just put weird, ridiculous changes on iReel, and it's not something that I would always refer to. So it's always best that you know the song really well, and you know it well enough to where if you see any errors or, you know, something that's incorrect, you can go in there and actually change it. Another method is when you're having to transpose for singers. Now, you might have a vocalist in your ensemble, and you might pick a chart that the range, let's say if a singer who's a soprano, but that range is for the chart is really low for them. And so you would have to transpose, raise the key up to get it up into their voices. And so the easiest way that I always do it is I go into finale and I put everything in concert pitch. And that was the biggest lesson I learned as a beginner jazz band director, is if you try to transpose something outside of its original key, and you don't know, and you're not familiar with the transposition of that instrument, you are going to screw up really bad, which is what I did. And so I had to learn to put everything in concert pitch and then transpose it that way. So what I would suggest to band directors, if you have a chart that you have to rewrite, write it in concert pitch first. Like, so Finale, Sibelius, they have all these programs where you can write out the charts, but write it in concert pitch. Then go in within that program and transpose the parts accordingly to the instrument itself. And especially in finale, there's a section in finale where you would hit and it'll say select concert pitch, or if you uncheck that button, it's going to transpose it based off the instrumentations that you have listed within that score. So if you have a full trumpet, trombone, sax, rhythm, and you put it in concert pitch, everything is going, the notes are all going to be, when I say the same, they're going to be in the same pitch range. But then once you uncheck that button, it's going to transpose it. So you're going to see all these key signatures switch in an instant. Okay. So on the side, it might be no accidentals. So it just might show no sharps or flats. And then all of a sudden, when you uncheck that button, you start seeing accidentals pop up all over the place on the page. And that's because it's now being transposed to the key or the register for that instrument. And that also saves you a lot of time as well. This is something that I try to practice, and I tell band directors that they should always try to arrange and do one chart that they can do a transposition for, especially if it's in a key that sounds better than what you purchased. I've done that before where I've purchased a chart, and after the band played it, I'm like, yeah, this key sounds weird. I should probably transpose this. And so I'll go back in and write, you know, and it doesn't take me long because I have to score, and I write it out in its original key in the form. And then when I put it in the key signature that I need the song in. Like, so for instance, the key was an F and I wanted to put it and raise it to A, you know, so I'll just move everything up a third. And now when I unclick that button for concert pitch, now it's going to transpose that entire chart in the key of A wherever I need it. So now all the parts are correctly in their own transposition. So this is something that I would highly suggest that band directors do. Also, it's good that you teach your students. So I thought something hip that a middle school band director down here does with his ensemble, which I think is super killing, is he actually writes out the transpositions for all the instruments. So if they're doing a B flat blues, he'll write it out, the parts in E flat. He'll write all the parts out for B flat, and then he'll write all the parts out in C, and then he'll for like, you know, piano, flute, whoever, and then he'll write out the bass clef. And so then he makes all his students play it in those transpositions, all of them, including rhythm section players. So by the end of the class, everybody knows if he were to put an E flat chart in front of a bass player, they'll be able to read it because he's shown them how to do that based off of their instrument, how to transpose on their instrument. So that's another way to kind of get your band to be comfortable with, you know, being flexible with keys and transpositions if there's a tune that you want to change, because that's going to very well happen. I would not suggest doing that, you know, on a, with a band that's super beginner, that they have no God-given clue what's going on. Like, you want to start them off as simple as possible. But if you're in high school and you have a more advanced group that can handle that, that would be a good practical exercise. And it'll actually prepare them for if they go to college to study jazz or just music in general, they'll already know how to do it. Another thing is teaching. Now, this is kind of separate from jazz, but it is just something in general that I thought is very useful. It's teaching them the other clefs, alto clef, tenor clef. You know, obviously, the most generic one that, or standard, I'm sorry, generic, the standard one that you would use in jazz would either be treble or bass. And so teaching them the other transpositions of those different clefs will also be helpful as well, just for their own musicality purposes. But outside of that, I would highly recommend if you have non-traditional jazz instruments located inside your jazz ensemble, to one, always pay attention to the charts that you're purchasing, because what happens, you fall victim, you spend all this money on these charts that you want at the beginning of the school year, and then you assume you're going to have those instrumentations, and come to find out you don't. So now you're not that you taking the L because you can use them later on in the future, but now you're having to figure out, like, well, what am I supposed to do with the current charts I have if I don't have a trombone player? I have, you know, a flute or French horn. I know I keep repeating those same instruments, but these are just instruments that I had to deal with when I first started teaching jazz band. I was not here, but at a middle school level, I was like, wow, okay, I don't know what to do with these instruments. And that could be a very scary thing if you've never, especially me being a rhythm section player, I don't play any of those instruments. So it was a big learning curve for me. And I'm pretty certain that if you have band directors who aren't horn players, so either guitar, piano, bass, or drums, that could be a learning curve. And vice versa, with band directors who have to deal with rhythm section players and they're horn players. So, I mean, it goes both ways. But all in all, the overall of this particular session for today, making sure that you understand the traditional setup and substitution of instruments that are needed to be used and within your jazz ensemble. And then also using programs like Finale, Sibelius, MuseScore. There's a slew of different programs that actually will let you write everything out in concert pitch, and then you can, and it'll automatically transpose it for you. iReal, again, is another one. If you're just having them to read chords, there is a section within the app where you can actually hit a transposition button, and there's a little icon. So you'll see like a saxophone icon, a trumpet icon, a trombone. It's like guitar. There's different icons. And if you click on it, it'll set the chords in that transpose key. For that instrument. And again, it just saves you a lot of time. And overall, I really hope that this particular session is helpful when you're viewing this, because it's really, that's one of the most important things, is knowing that if you're playing, especially if you're playing in a key that's not comfortable for the band, you need to be flexible enough to have that transposition. And also, one last thing, like I mentioned earlier with the vocalist, it's inevitable that it might happen that you might purchase a chart that singer just either can't sing that high or that low. So you might need to actually transpose it. And if that's the case, what I would always suggest for you to do with singers is have the singer meet with you, have the vocal part, because most big band charts all have vocal parts. You know, if it's a chart that you're doing that requires a vocalist, and you want to ask the singer for their range. Now, if it's a young singer, and they're like, I don't know what my range is, then I've always done this. I've sat at the piano and I always start with middle C, and then I will show them on the piano. If I keep going down, what note do you think is the lowest for you? And they'll usually tell me where to stop. And then I say, okay. And then I'll go from middle C and I go up. What's the highest note that you're in? And they'll say, stop right here. So if I have, if I'm at a D3 with a G5, okay, I know that's kind of a middle section range right there. That's, you know, a little lower tenor, but then it can get all the way up to a mezzo soprano. So, okay. So then you look on your big band chart and you find the highest note on that chart. And if it goes above what they just told you, then that chart may not be a good fit. Or vice versa, if they have a note that's lower, then they have a lot of notes that are lower than where their cutoff is, then you pretty much can't use that chart unless you transpose it. So that was a lesson that I learned recently with one of my current singers here at the university. And he mentioned to me, he's like, Professor, I'm a low bass. I can't sing past, I can't sing higher than a D4. So I was like, wow, okay. So he's like, but he can go as low as an A3. So I mean, way below the staff, you know what I'm saying? Way below middle C. And so that was, for me, it was a learning curve. I was like, oh, wow, okay. I didn't realize that there actually is a such thing where, like, when you're looking at the chart and you have to know this. So that's also something to be mindful as well. But that's all I have for today. I hope this was very helpful. I hope this session is, you'll gain some knowledge out of this and keep transposing.
Professor Brandon Robinson, you know, it amazes me how creative directors have to be when it comes to filling their ensemble. I think everyone has the assumption that you walk in day one and you have everything at your fingertips. You have a full jazz band with doublers and all kinds of things. But those who are in the know, that's not what music education looks like these days. Mm-hmm. You may have a string player thrown into jazz. You never know. But you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to tell, you know, these young musicians, no, you can't play? No, we're going to make a way. So that's one thing I really do appreciate with music educators today. We are improvisers, you know, and improvisation is part of jazz. I mean, well, how can we make this work? Because everyone can make music. And I'm glad you made the point. Maybe a French horn doesn't sound quite right in the trombone section, but you made it work, though. It happened. You know, so I just want to encourage everybody who's listening. If you're going through this, you know, keep doing exactly what Professor Robinson said, you know, go in there with the finale and transpose and things like that. There's so many resources out there to make your ensemble a successful one and a unique one. So Thank you so much. I appreciate you for this session today. I really enjoyed it. It hit home. I've been here plenty of times and I know you guys have also. If you have a topic, maybe, or if you just want to contact us and say, you know what, I really appreciate these sessions you guys do, and they're free. And once again, I'm going to say they are free. Where can you get great content like this?
Free.
For free. Well, I'm glad you asked. You can get it here at www.clearwaterjazz.com. Check us out in our education section. And if you want something in the future that we haven't presented, or you just want to give us a great feedback, we would love to hear back from our listeners. You can email us at www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. And we would love to hear from you. So until next time, Professor Robinson, thank you again. And I am your host, Michael Kernodle. And like we always say here, keep it swinging, everybody.
Keep it swinging. Keep it swinging.
Have a good one. Thank you. Bye-bye.
thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at Marine Max Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.